This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yeah, friends here at NOLA Drinks, we don't get on Twitter fishing for thank yous for helping somebody out, or maybe it's even just doing our job. But hey, we don't go looking for the thanks. We're just happy to help. There you go. Hey, we got a good show coming up for you today. What do we have coming up for you today? A good show, like I just said. First off, we are going to chat with Fred Perrant, who is the regional brand ambassador for Hendrick's Gin, a very fine gin. And Fred's a great guy. Very smart guy, interesting fella. And we talk obviously about Hendrick's Gin, but we talk about several other things, some of the other stuff that he's involved in. And one of the things I certainly want to say is I will be having Fred back on the show. You hear three segments of our interview, and I want to also give a special thanks. We were at the Bourbon O Bar at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel, and in all honesty, friends, I had not actually spent a lot of time in that bar. Kind of thought it was sort of tourist trappy just because of its location right there, you know, Bourbon and Orleans. And wow, you know, great bar program, really cool decor. I mean, I'd been in there before, but not really spent a lot of time perusing, exploring the cocktail menu, these things. They got a good program going on in there. They know what's going on, really friendly people. The menus are really cool. They talk about a lot of the history of the drinks and these things. Excuse me, the presentation in there is great. So that's actually where we taped with Fred. Got a little sidetracked there. Sorry about that. But we were hanging out for quite a while. So what you hear is three segments of interviews with Fred, as I just mentioned. But so much great conversation when we took the breaks for the commercials, which were a lot longer than 2 minutes or so, like you hear on the air. Just a very thoughtful guy. And I look forward to having Fred on to discuss various topics in the future. Tales of the Cocktail is something we talked about quite a bit and some other things. Fred, his family is from, or some of his family anyways, from the area. And so he has his roots here. We were kind of kidding because his last name is Parent, or Perrant, I guess, as we would say. So that's what we decided to call him. I think he's going back that way because he's reconnecting here with his Southeast Louisiana roots. But anyway, really interesting conversation with Fred. And then have the great pleasure of paying a visit to one of the famed restaurants here in New Orleans, of course, Brennan's, the 400 block of Royal Street, what is now a Ralph Brennan restaurant. Really fantastic place. And if you're unaware, the Ralph Brennan segment, if you will, of the family took the restaurant over just about 3 years ago from another part of the family and basically tore the thing almost, you know, the interior almost all the way down, pulled the floor up, all that good stuff, and redid the whole place. And it's gorgeous. We actually visit with Patrick Brennan, family member, son of Ralph, I believe there, and then Braith Tidwell, who is the beverage director. And they spent some time with us. We actually do the interview in their wine room, which is a little bit below ground level. Brick Air used to be a carriage house, and it's absolutely spectacular. So do check that out. We'll put some pictures up on Facebook because obviously it's a radio program and it's kind of hard to see what we're talking about, but we'll put some photos up. It's a beautiful room. It's available for private dining and groups and these sorts of things. But we talk with Braith, as I said, and Patrick. And then actually after we completed the interview, Patrick was kind enough to take us around the restaurant, to tour the upstairs dining rooms. They have done a wonderful job at that place. It's gorgeous. The menu's great. Their executive chef, Slade Rushing, a very noted chef, been doing very well for himself in town. They've put together a really good menu. We talk a little bit about some seasonal stuff they have coming up for the fall, both drink and food-wise there. But a really nice visit and a great deal of hospitality, which I'll talk about at the very end of the show when we come back to close things out. But that's pretty much what we got going on today. Again, visit with Fred Perrant of Hendrick's Gin, and then we pay a visit over to Brennan's with Patrick Brennan and Braith Tidwell. A lot of really good fun friends that way. Pardon me again. So next week, just a couple programming notes for y'all, being that we air on a Thursday here on the radio, and Thursday, as you know, is Thanksgiving. You know, I once had a friend of mine say to me a few years ago, yeah, Thanksgiving's coming up pretty quick. Is that on a Thursday this year? Yeah, generally pretty much is. I think you can pencil Thursday in it's sometime in November on a Thursday, pretty much. I can guarantee you that. But since we always broadcast radio-wise anyway on a Thursday, we're going to be running, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to run, either an amalgamation of some recent interviews and some other things, or we might just run a show. We don't have greatest hits here on the Nola Drink Show. That would be too much of a reach. But, you know, a good show or something like that that we'll run. And so we'll be back with a brand new show in 2 weeks after that. So I just want to give you a heads up there. Hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving, by the way. We'll talk a little bit about that, too, at the end of the show if we have a bit of time. But that's what we got going on here programming-wise. Wanted to mention a couple events coming up over the next couple weeks to turn your attention towards. Mark down on your calendar. Coming up this Saturday and Sunday is the Treme Creole Gumbo Festival. That's a lot of fun, friends. That takes place at Armstrong Park. Both days goes from 11 a.m. to 7:30. And yes, it's a lot about gumbo. There's some panel discussions. There's going to be a lot of great food, but it's also since I mentioned the panel discussion, they're going to have a panel with Frank Brightson of Brightson's, Linda Green from Miss Linda's New Orleans Soul Food, Susan Spicer, who owns Bayona Rosedale and Mondo, Celestine Dunbar of Dunbar's Creole Cuisine, Mike Galata, who owns Mofo and Maypop and executive chef there, and Erica Lasur, who is the chef owner of Diva Dog. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then the music, friends, it's two solid days of music. It's free to get in. You know, you got to pay for food and drink, of course, but free to get in and enjoy the music. Some really good bands, of course, famous Treme Brass Band, Original Pinstripe Brass Band, Free Agents Brass Band, and a To Be Continued Brass Band. That's Saturday. So TBC Brass Band, To Be Continued Brass Band is closing out the Saturday programming. And then on Sunday, we have the Panettes Brass Band, all-female brass band. They're fantastic. The Wonderful Hot 8 Brass Band. Then Trumpet Mafia. And I was just talking with a friend of mine about them the other day. Man, they are something else. And then closing out Sunday Grammy Award winning local brass band, of course, Rebirth Brass Band from 6:15 to 7:30. So again, Armstrong Park this weekend, the Treme Creole Gumbo Festival. And that's put on by the folks from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and Foundation Incorporated. Those people are, of course, the folks behind Jazz Fest. So that's another really good bit of programming here, and of course, obviously going to be some great gumbo. The food's going to be awesome. Music's going to be awesome. I think the weather's looking pretty good. Speaking of weather, fall. Friends, it's fall. Okay, you hear me complain about the heat and all that stuff because I really don't like the super hot, humid stuff. Fall is here. Get out there, enjoy. We've had some sunshiny days. Not too humid, not too cold, not too hot, just really nice outside. And keep in mind here, friends, in the New Orleans area anyway, we probably get about, I don't know, call it 20 days if we're lucky, 25 days every year that are like this. Don't take them for granted. Get out there and check it out. I know I'll be outside. I'm trying to be outside as much as I can right now. Also coming up next weekend, we're going to skip ahead because, of course, as I mentioned, we're going to be off for the holiday next Thursday. The Bayou Classic's going on. Of course, that's the great football game that takes place Saturday, November 25th, Saturday right there after Thanksgiving, that pits the Tigers of Grambling State against the Jaguars of Southern University. But there's a whole bunch of fandango that goes on. The game's at 4 o'clock at the Dome, of course, but a lot of the pre-stuff, the Fan Fest kicks off 11:30 in the morning at Champion Square. One of the highlights of this, of course, are both the Grambling and Southern marching bands are just stellar. So the performances, of course, during halftime and all that stuff from the bands are just fantastic, so don't miss that. But there's also a parade that I want to highlight, and there's a bunch of other stuff going on you can find online, but there's the Bayou Classic Parade. It goes from the French Market to the Dome. That's on Saturday at 10 a.m. Check that out, because you're gonna have both bands, I believe, then, you know, like a lot of local high school marching bands and things like that also take place in that. So there you go, the Bayou Classic, a lot of fun, friends. And then also the following Saturday, two days from now, on the 25th, is a Holiday in the Vines at Pontchartrain Vineyards. That takes place from noon to 3 o'clock up in Bush, and it's an annual festival. Benefits a charity. Funds this year, ask for a donation at the gate, goes to the very worthy St. Bernard Project, which helps folks rebuild the long-term parts of the process, which we talk about on the show from time to time after natural disasters. It's a very, very important organization that picks up the pieces and carries the torch through what can be a very difficult and after sort of the novelty, if you will, I hate to use that word, wears off. But that's what it's all about there. Go check out PontchartrainVineyards.com. Live music from Lindsay Zayorski. Santa Claus, pony rides for the kids, tractor rides through the vineyard, wine sales, all kinds of cool stuff going to be going on out there at Pontchartrain Vineyards. Going to be a lot of fun. So that, again, is the stuff next weekend on Saturday. Bayou Classic, great football game. Check out that parade. And then you can also go out to Pontchartrain Vineyards and check out Holiday in the Vines. And then check out Gumbo Festival this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday at Armstrong Park. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show, and then we're going to be back kicking things off with our conversation with Fred Perron from Hendrix gin, and then off to Brennan's, and then we'll close things out. Come on back.
Floor show starts at 9. Give me a great big glass of wine.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Now, if you've ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, friends, thanks for tuning in. Hey, if you were listening at the beginning of the show, and I hope you were, you know that we are sitting here at the Bourbon O Bar in the Bourbon Orleans Hotel, and pleased to see Fred. We're going to call you Fred Perron instead of Fred Perry. We're going to get into that story, but cool. Fred is the brand ambassador for Hendrick's Gin, and you're paying us a visit, man. But you have some strong ties to the area, bro.
I do, and as of recently, in the last 5 years, I've really started to revisit those ties. My father was born in New Orleans, actually, and his father was born in Madisonville. My grandmother's from New Orleans, so we always had this great, rich history in our family, though my father moved to Los Angeles when he was quite young.
Okay.
And their family moved, and that's where I was born. But we always have eaten gumbo for every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. It's always been a big part of our family. And when I actually took on this role with Hendrick's was when I first started visiting New Orleans as an adult.
Oh, really?
Okay. So in the last couple of years, it's really been a great kind of revisit. And I feel a beautiful familial energy here. It really feels like home.
That's really cool, yeah, man. And you and I met a few months ago. Mm-hmm. You were doing a really cool presentation for Hendrick's Gin down there at Kingfish,
yeah,
from where we're sitting
fun.
Now, which was really fun, and that's sort of how this came to pass with doing that. And we were kind of joking because we were, and I want to just tell the listener, so your last name is Parent, spelled like Parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, but you start talking about the cultural connection to here.
Sure.
So we're going to call you, as I said at the beginning, call you Perron.
I like it. Yeah. I think Grandma would love that, actually.
Grandma would totally
that's awesome.
That. Right on.
Yeah.
So you're in town for an event? You're just here for a night, man? Or you?
Just 2 nights. I got in late last night.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'd stay here for weeks if I could.
You picked good weather, man.
I did. Apparently, I walked into right at the cool break, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's been hot and chilly, but it's been nice. It's been really good.
Yeah, cool. So, and you guys are going to do a little. It's an event at the Dome. You said
at the Dome. Yeah, it's called Moonlight and Miracles. I believe it's a charity event that our entire portfolio is going to be sponsoring and representing at. But I'm going to be doing the Hendrick's Bar with an awesome fall cocktail called the Fall All Over that I've been doing.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And it's a great Hendrick's drink that kind of departs from like the traditional summer kind of vibes. That's with cloudy apple juice, ginger syrup, Hendrick's gin, fresh lemon. It's still fairly simple, but then some grated nutmeg and cinnamon that really kind of brings out that fall vibe.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool. And, you know, we're going to talk for a couple segments in addition to this one, Fred, so we have some time to get into some of this stuff. But let's talk about Hendrick's. Hendrick's is one of my
favorite gins. I've never been, and I'm not knocking anybody's anything, sure, don't get me wrong, but I've just never been a big fan of the London dry style because I get overwhelmed by juniper.
Sure.
And I find that Hendrick's is very refreshing. That cucumber note mm-hmm. that everybody knows it for is also very popular.
Mm-hmm.
How did you gravitate to the brand? Was it?
Oh, it's a great question.
Yeah.
For me, in full disclosure, I've always been a whiskey drinker.
Okay.
And a lot of people that know me real well know that I've loved Irish whiskey from the day I started drinking. One of the few gins that I would like was Hendrick's, and really the only gin I often would put on my menus when I was a beverage director and bartender in New York. You got to have a gin cocktail no matter what. Even when gin was still making kind of its ascension and rise, I would always use Hendrick's because it played so well with cocktails, but also, to your point, it's very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have a bad gin story. That was something I really focused on when I first took this job. I was in Harlem, New York. It was a neighborhood that had been a huge gin neighborhood 30 years prior. And in a lot of places, people were like, it's my grandfather's drink. It's my father's drink. It's my mother's drink. I don't drink gin. That's not for me. And I did this thing called the Hendrick's Cocktail Confessional, where I basically talked to people about their bad gin experiences, then made them a drink with Hendrick's and had them honestly give their opinion on it. And I'm talking 100% of the time, people were like, wow, maybe I've miscounted gin. Maybe gin's more than what I thought. And I was like, this isn't your grandfather's gin, you know? Even though Hendrick's is in an apothecary bottle and it boasts our distillation history since the 1800s, it's still a fairly new age gin or new world gin that it was created in 1999 in the UK, came to the US in 2000. So we're really still in the early stages, but as we've seen over the last 5 years, the growth of the category, I can very much attribute to Hendrick's and its approachability. We always joke that it's a gateway gin, even for me, where I would consider myself a gin aficionado now. I drink a tremendous amount of gin, not just Hendrick's, because I really want to always taste what new flavors and what people are working on. But I think day to day, Hendrick's always stands up as the best, if not one of the best craft gins on the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and actually you touched on something, Fred, that I wanted to ask because, and a couple things really, what you mentioned, I think, you know, what obviously dominated the market was that London dry style. So it's
for many
Tanqueray
years.
And mm-hmm. these sorts of things that are very popular, and that's what everybody's exposure to gin was and their familiarity with gin from where it comes. And then now we see, like you said, Hendrick's and some of these brands. And then, and kind of skipping ahead where I want to go, but we'll do it, is with all these craft distilleries that are now popping up around the country and elsewhere, as you just said, within the past 5 years, I have tasted so many interesting gins where people are not beholden to that
traditional
dry style.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why often a distilled gin, I guess, is the name of the category for non-London dry or what we make. But they also call it New World Gin, I think, which is an interesting speak to that it's a different style of making it. Botanicals are still, a lot of the traditional botanicals are being used in most gins, just like with ours. But it's that nod to different flavor that I think is really bringing in the new gin drinker, like that cucumber and rose.
Yeah.
I think it's what ultimately set Hendrick's apart in the beginning, is that we were using an element like cucumber, which at the time was not being used in spirits, barely at all.
Right.
Now you see it very prevalently. There's other products they make with cucumber. I've even come across cucumber tonics, cucumber sodas.
Yeah.
Which is a great nod to the cucumber's activity in making gin taste wonderful, which is something that Hendrick's still stands behind. We flew a cucumber blimp through the sky 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
Called the Hendrick's Airship. It was a 135-foot cucumber blimp that we actually flew all over the country. We throw a World Cucumber Day every year. So we haven't forgotten our roots.
Y'all still have the blimp?
We don't own it. It was actually a collaboration. With Van Wagner, who is the blimp producer, really, really wonderful group, who wrapped and built it. We actually designed it ourselves. So as of right now, it's not floating and flying, but it doesn't mean it won't ever come back. But we do have two hot air balloons on the East and West Coast. We actually just launched our East Coast one and one in Canada as well. But we've had one on the West Coast for about 8 years.
Okay.
We do the Air Balloon Fiesta in New Mexico every year, along with some other big glows, and it's awesome. It's a big 16-person hot air balloon that I get to make cocktails in. So
that's really cool. I just learned something maybe Fred of interest is that that we're having an inaugural hot air balloon festival coming up, I think, on Sunday this weekend.
No way.
First one ever in New Orleans.
That's amazing.
We're gonna get you signed up for that
one. I don't know, maybe short notice for this one, but for the next one, I'd love to be involved.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, that's so cool.
First one ever.
So, Fred, tell us, where is Hendrix located? Give us just, sure. We got about 2 minutes before we got to take a break. So
Hendrix is made in the lowlands of Scotland in a small little town called Girvan, which is where we have our neutral grain distillery, and we do some other barreling. We have a cooperage there. We have it in a little place called the Gin Palace, which is an old World War II munitions bunker that has housed our two stills since the late 60s. It's actually where they decided to build the still room, was where they were always being stored. So that's where we house our two gin stills. Lowlands of Scotland, our Dufftown distillery is where we make Glenfiddich and Balvenie, a little bit further north in the Speyside region.
Okay.
Not Dufftown, I'm sorry, but in the Speyside is where Glenfiddich and Balvenie are. So great, you know, drive along the countryside, you can see quite a few William Grant distilleries.
So was the idea then as William Grant portfolio progressed and y'all were kind of looking at things, he said, hey, we need to be making a gin. Is that kind of how this happened?
Big time. I think, Charles Gordon, the great-great-grandson of William Grant, bought the two stills in 1966 at an auction. And I think it was the idea of, one day, I think we're going to make a gin. And it still took about 30-some years for them to really arrive. I think now we want to make one. And that's when Leslie Gracie got involved, who's still our master distiller, lead chemist. She tried, she says, well over 100 gin recipes before she arrived at, you know, the literal perfection that is Hendrix now. And that's what I love about working with Leslie, and why I love to visit her and go pick her brain every chance I get, is she is one of the most formidable noses and palates in the distillation game in the liquor industry, and takes great pride in Hendrix, in the sense that she tastes, noses, and tastes every batch of Hendrix before it goes to bottle.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, Fred, let's do this. We're going to take a little bit of a break here on the show.
We're going
to come back. I think we're going to make somebody else shake up some drinks.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and we'll watch.
I like it.
Because there's going to be one that requires a lot of shaking. I think you probably all know. Most of you know what it is. But we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Friends, we're chatting with Fred Perrant, brand ambassador for Hendrix Gin, paying us a visit down here in the Big Easy. Happy to see Fred, and stay tuned, friends. We're going to be right back.
Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, thanks for tuning in today. Yep, we are at the Bourbon O Bar here at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel, chatting with Fred Perrant, who is the brand ambassador for Hendrix Gin. Now, for you, if you're listening to the show or the podcast, that was about a 30-second, maybe two-minute break. For us, hey, man, we had a couple Ramos Gin Fizzes made, nice. So it was a little bit longer, but it was done,
yes.
Done in a really cool way, man.
Yeah, it really was. Part of the reason I wanted to have the interview here is to really see how they do business here at the Bourbon O. They've had a Hendrix Gin Fizz on their menu since I've been coming to New Orleans, and they also make it in a very particular way. So some people that are familiar with the Gin Fizz knows that it has to be shaken for a minimum of 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. They actually have a machine here that does the massive shaking work. Rachel, the bartender, was kind enough to kind of take us through the process and talk to us about why they do it and what it is. But it makes a damn good Ramos Gin Fizz.
Absolutely.
They also use a little bit of orange flower water in it that I think is really a wonderful touch.
That's really neat. I was wondering what that was because, you know, lots of times you get that sort of more the orange zest or orange peel note.
Sure,
and it wasn't that. And so
it's a little bit more floral. Yeah, really nice and really nice on the nose too, which I really like. But yeah, this is a great stop off if no one's been here to enjoy a Ramos Gin Fizz here. It's a stop I make literally every time I come to town.
Good call, man. Yeah. Good call. It's the first time I've had one here, totally. So I'm pretty happy about it.
Nice.
Good choice. Well, Fred, one of the things it's always interesting to talk to you about, we were talking about during the break here, your appreciation for history and tradition with these things. And one of the things I think is really neat, we were talking about the history of music.
Sure.
And recorded music.
Absolutely.
And Victrolas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a really cool thing called Tipples and Talking Machines.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think that's
sure,
really
sure. So this is something I started about a year and a half, 2 years ago with Hendrix. We do something called the Hendrix Deconstructed or the Hendrix Deconstruction, which many of my predecessors have done. And it's very crucial to our educational process in the sense that we take people through our two-still process where they taste, and really bartenders in each city, taste each of the still-strength gins. To really see how Hendrix is made. And then we've always done some sort of event around that. And 2 years ago, I was told that I could make my own event. And they were like, we really encourage you to take your creativity, use your own background. I have a background as a DJ and a musician. And so I let it kind of bounce around my head over the holiday and came back in January and started working up something. And I came across this correlation that hadn't necessarily been outlined, but really seemed very clear to me as someone who is a bartender, mixologist, and a DJ, which is the correlation between recorded music and recorded cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I started pulling at that thread of the sweater, and the more I pulled on it, the more information I found that kind of supported my thesis, which was the two have always gone hand in hand, just like we're hearing music while we're enjoying a cocktail right now.
Yep.
And I think New Orleans speaks to that better than damn near any city in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
That beautiful relationship. So when I came with tipplers and talking machines, it was really about like a tippler or a tipple. A tippler was someone who makes drinks. A tipple was an old name for a drink, really turn of the century, even up until the roaring 20s. And the talking machine was one of the first names given to the Victor Victrola. It was called the Victor Talking Machine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a nod to that old language, and that we'd still use a lot of that old language and how we deal in those things today. But essentially what I found was I started with the Bon Vivant's Companion, Jerry Thomas, which is for many of us mixologist bartenders call that the Bible, basically.
Right.
You know, it was really right. Where the first grouping of recorded cocktails was written down. So you find a lot of your great, including the gin fizz is in there. There's a lot of great drinks Before that, all cocktails were handed down from bartender to barback apprentice, from generation to generation. You would have to go to a bar because that bar makes X drink. Like, that's what they make.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't sharing those. There was no consistency across the board of, I want to go and order an old fashioned in Detroit or in Los Angeles or in Chicago. It would be much more central to the bar that made those drinks. So now, when you have Thomas coming along, who's compiled these drinks, and, you know, he was the most famous bartender of his time, probably one of the most high-paid bartenders of all time. It was said that at his heyday, he was making more money. $400 a week was more than the vice president of the United States at the time.
Wow.
So he was someone that was
and a far
really,
more important job than the vice president of the United States, I would argue.
I would say so, right? You know, it's like, so it's like one of those moments where it's like really cool. So I kind of took that freeze frame of what I'd learned about Jerry and started looking into record players. I love records. I still spin vinyl myself. And Thomas Edison, who is credited with inventing so many wonderful things, including the light bulb and so many things, actually invented the first recording machine, the first one. It was called the Edison phonograph machine, made in about 1898, or maybe a little bit before that, but really became popular in 1898. What was so interesting about the parallels I then saw with like that late last half of the century in the 1800s, and it also correlates with the Industrial Revolution. So both things I could be talking about, I think the middle line is probably the Industrial Revolution and the nation's building up based on that. But it was so interesting that the cocktails started being shared and spread because, okay, now you can have this Fizz or the Sazerac or these things in a different city because now people have these books. People were learning all of the drinks
right,
now.
Right.
With the music correlation, it was so cool because it was like, people used to just make music, you know, like people would sit on their porch and make music, and everyone that made music was a musician. The concept of recording it really wasn't there until they invented. So the actual phonograph was made to record the music.
Right.
Until they realized it also played it back when you flip the horn around. So they used to record straight into the horn, and you flip the horn around, it would shoot the music back out. And so this is something that is now probably created what we're using right now, you know, microphones, how they're concave and like all of that technology.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Came from then. So I started also seeing that immediately once bars were making their cocktails, there was always music there. And once they could have, you know, maybe the Edison wasn't a very popular machine as far as like all people had them, but you fast forward about 15, 20 years, the Victrola and the gramophone and all these things that came out that even disputed. They're like, oh no, we're the first. So just like with cocktail recipes, you often see people as inventors battling it out for that same thing.
I think it's a really interesting point, Fred, that you raise, mm-hmm. because I think sometimes maybe we think using music as the analogy here or as a parallel, I think mm-hmm. it's a great point. Because I think maybe sometimes people think if you go back and you mm-hmm. listen to, you know, really early 20s jazz, of sure. which we have a lot of stuff from New Orleans that's big recorded, time. Some of these early recordings yeah. of this, and it wasn't like all of a sudden the music started, was not invented right the day that it was first recorded.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
The recording process just kind of dropped in the middle of something that had already been growing
already
and,
big
and building.
Sure.
And the same thing with cocktails. Like you said, these 100%. Were being made in places and it was an oral history. Mm-hmm. Occasionally maybe got written down, mm-hmm. you know, kept in the vaults in sure. in the bar with the recipes and these sorts of things. And mm-hmm. and so the actual act of capturing it is not really the act of creating it
right.
or its genesis. It was
it's
just along the way.
Point. It's the act of physically recording it,
yeah.
which is the act of taking it to like, it's almost like with the printing press. You know what I mean? It was the same thing. It took the ability for people to read became exponential. The ability for people to know, understand different types of music became exponential. Same with cocktails, where you could have a favorite cocktail now, not just a favorite bar kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
So I think it's really interesting and has continued. It also made it a commodity. It made cocktails a genuine commodity, and it also made music a genuine commodity. Which we have seen throughout the years really changed the style of doing things. And even when you get to modern day with both industries, they're both kind of in a similar place, like of boom and bust. Now we're in like kind of this kind of epic boom right now of both of those things and how things are recorded. But even if you look at what's going on with streaming.
Yeah, right.
And then now with, you know, that things have become national and international in the bartending industry, that we actually have an actual industry. That is kind of managed by those in the industry. And I think it's a really interesting kind of correlation that it's you're never going to have a bunch of good drinks without listening to music, and you're never going to have a bunch of good music without enjoying some drinks.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's a great point.
And
yeah.
that correlation's kind of, it's even lasted through the test of time.
Absolutely, yeah. and very much here in New Orleans. And I think I would add to that too, Fred, that I think we know in both the world of drinks and liquor, mm-hmm. as well as in the world of music, lots of times what's really popular is not very good.
That's really funny that you'd mention that. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And like really how the underground might not be popular, and then many years later when you revisit it, you're like, this is classic. This is the quintessential history of this, but those people might not have been able to enjoy those successes
the
in their life, you know.
Absolutely.
Which is,
well, Fred, let's do this. We'll take another quick commercial break. Awesome. Here, and then we're going to come back. We're chatting friends with Fred Perron, who is the brand ambassador for Hendrix Gin, and we're here at the Bourbon O Bar at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel. I'm looking right across the street, right across Bourbon Street, to the Funky Pirates. Speaking of music and drinks, live music, we got some blues going on across the street, as we do here in New Orleans. Take a little break here on the show, friends. Come on back.
Awesome.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all night long, come on and let the good times roll.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Goodbye, Joe. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. As always, hey, thanks for tuning into the show. I appreciate it. Pleased to be chatting with Fred Perron, who is the brand ambassador for Hendrix Gin, paying us a visit down here in New Orleans, as we mentioned. And great conversations in between the breaks. Conversations. For, Fred, we're going to have you back on the show because we'll have some other stuff to talk about.
I look forward to it.
Yeah,
right on.
Yeah, I can already tell.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
I don't mean to be cryptic, and I also don't mean to leave people on some sort of cliffhanger like, what were you all talking about?
Right.
But there's some really interesting stuff, that things that we've talked about on the show in times past, and Fred has a good voice on a lot of this stuff, so we're going to have Fred back on to talk about some different things. But what we're talking about today, Fred, is Hendrix Gin.
I like it.
Yeah, and I like it too.
Nice.
And it's one of my very favorite gins. We just had a great Ramos Gin Fizz here at the Bourbon O Bar. But we touched a little bit on where Hendrix is located. Let's talk a little bit about how Hendrix is made.
Awesome.
Give us a little bit of the rundown, just thinking on the botanical approach and the distillation approach and these things.
Awesome. So essentially, Hendrix comes from a neutral grain spirit, which is an overproof vodka, for lack of a better term.
Sure, right. Everything is, right?
And then we actually impart our fruits, flowers, seeds, and roots, our botanicals, in two different ways. We have two different stills. One is circa 1860, a Bennett traditional copper pot still that actually steeps the botanicals, the 11 botanicals, in the belly and creates a distillate that's slightly more viscous, captures a lot more of the earthy tones and some of the spicier notes of Hendrix.
Okay.
We then take those same 11 botanicals and put them through a different process in the Carterhead still, which is circa 1945. That actually heats the neutral grain spirit to a vapor.
Is that more like a column still? Is that, or is that kind of
it's its own hybrid thing? It's definitely its own style.
Okay.
The Carterhead is the style of still.
Okay.
I guess it's a little bit more like a column than the pot still.
The pot still, okay.
But it is its own thing in the sense that you have these little, this basket at the top called a flavor basket where actually all the botanicals are packed. The neutral grain spirits heated until it becomes vapor and then passes through those botanicals as vapor. That's okay. Really the big thing that really sets it apart.
Okay.
And then drips back into liquid again. So it's a little less viscous, much more floral notes. A lot of the brighter citrus notes come out just a little bit more. But what's wonderful about it is both of them are proper London dry gins. Really good gins in their own right. But they're then combined. The way Leslie likes to describe it is if it's a cell, the Bennett would be the nucleus and the Carter Head would be the membrane.
Okay.
And kind of how they react with each other. But she always often, it's funny that she uses that metaphor. She describes it as a very round taste. Hendrix mm-hmm. is very balanced. Mm-hmm. And then we add the essence of cucumber and rose last, right before the water from the Penwapple Reservoir, which is a beautiful Scottish reservoir. We add our water to bring it to bottle strength. So we add our essence of cucumber and rose last, which is also what makes Hendrix a distilled gin as opposed to a London dry.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know London dry does not mean it was made in London exclusively. It typically means that it's made in one-shot distillation, meaning all of the botanicals are distilled at the same time in hot distillation. We actually take our cucumber and rose, our essences that we make similar to how you make perfume. Lots of cold water, lots of grain alcohol, gently pressing those flavors in high volumes. So to give you an idea of how potent they are, it takes about 500 grams of rose petals to make 1 ounce of that rose essence,
wow.
and similar
okay.
to the cucumber. So it's very important because rose is so delicate and cucumber is so crisp and delicate mm-hmm. that if you were to hot distill them, you would taste something more like chlorophyll and cabbage.
It would be bitter, right?
It just wouldn't come out to get those
chlorophyll
flavors.
Chlorophyll and cabbage.
You know what I mean? It might be good. Maybe we'll see that come out in a gin one of these days. There's a lot of gins coming out. But it was an important step in what made us a premium distilled or New World gin, I think, and also really bolstered that category and people seeing that they could add flavors in more than one way.
Which mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I really like about it, Fred, as we were talking about before, and this is just my own personal taste, is certain gins that wallop you with... I have a hard time getting past juniper. Mm-hmm. To me, it overwhelms everything.
True.
And that just...
It's a very powerful flavor.
It's a very powerful flavor, and that's just me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I do like about Hendrix is that when I taste it, I get more... Like you said, it's balanced. I get more subtlety. I get some of these essences come out maybe clearer and more equal.
Sure.
Than just sort of playing second fiddle to juniper,
I guess
is maybe a way to put it.
I think it's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
And I find it very, very enjoyable that way. And I was never really a gin drinker until discovering Hendrix and some other ones that I particularly care for on that level. Where, Fred, do you guys typically, how do you work sourcing your botanicals?
That's a great question. So our botanicals are sourced from all over the world. We actually have a father and son team of foragers. And I used to think I had a cool job until I found out what their job was.
Business card says forager.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
So they actually spend time all over the world, and we do have a consistency and a quality that we look for. There are certain places where we like to return to get certain botanicals if we can, but that also is weather dependent. It's dependent on a lot of factors.
Agricultural products, sure.
So the big part with Hendrix is consistency. It's consistently bringing you that blend that is Hendrix gin. No matter where we source it from. So I think that's actually lends to Leslie's process, our master distiller, Leslie Gracie. She noses and tastes every batch of Hendrix before it goes to bottle. We still do minuscule batches in comparison to many of our competitors. When you call it small batch, that usually means less than 1,000 liters per distillation. Ours are closer to 450, 500 liters
oh, wow. okay.
per distillation. So that gives her a great control over the care, if that answers your question. So
it does. Absolutely.
It doesn't just come from one place, but it does come from one consistent resource.
And that's mm-hmm. exactly what I was trying to get at, because I think a lot of people, when they think about distillates, when they think about spirits, they think that they're static, and they think that they don't compare it to, say, something like wine, where when we talk about wine, we understand how wine is terroir-driven,
sure.
Stylistically driven in the cellar, these sorts of things. And so many distillates are actually that way, and especially something like a gin, when we're dealing with multiple botanicals,
sure.
we're dealing with an agricultural product that changes.
Absolutely.
And so maintaining that consistency and that art of maintaining that consistency is a difficult task. It's not just, hey, plug and play.
And a crucial one. I think it takes a lot of care to do it. it and do it right. But I think it is crucial to that, to creating that consistency.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important. So, Fred, how long have you been? You said this, I think, but how long have you been with Hendrix?
I've been with Hendrix for almost 4 years now. Okay. I've been in this, or 3 years, but I've been in this role for about 2 years now.
We have a couple minutes, 3 minutes left. What you're a brand ambassador, but you have a specific region, correct?
I do. Yeah, yeah. So in the U.S., we have 4 brand ambassadors. So we do split up the country in that way. In most other countries, because there's slightly less volume, there's less people, you know, a lot of people here in the States. There's usually one ambassador per country. But we're lucky for that we have a team working across such a massive market like the U.S. And you want to make sure that you're there to actually serve your market. So if you're stretched a bit too thin, you're not getting to town enough, you're not supporting people enough. So a big part of why we have a team is to provide that really high quality support to every single region, and also to support one another, like that we have people who do what we do, whose brains we can pick on projects.
Yeah, and see what all sorts of stuff. Taking notes out on the field and comparing notes. How often do you get to Scotland, man?
At least once a year. I try and go every year just to spend some time with Leslie. Like last year was a big year for me because I got to do my full William Grant kind of induction trip, where I got to really visit all the distilleries and kind of see our Scotch whiskey distillation process, which was breathtaking.
Secret handshake.
All the secret handshakes and and pinky promises and all that. But yeah, like this year has been quite busy. I'm hoping to get back before the end of December, just for a short visit and check in with the distillery. But I try and get back every year because it really is almost like a pilgrimage and returning to the source.
I'm guessing that it's kind of refreshing and re-energizing.
Big time.
To reconnect with what it is
that
you're doing.
Especially with Leslie. If you ever get a chance to meet Leslie, like she does get to the States every once in a while.
I mean, if you want to bring me out to Scotland to the distillery,
right?
To meet
Leslie,
I'd rather.
And now we're talking.
Yeah, man.
I like it.
So when
you meet Leslie, you'll realize that where our most unusual moniker comes from very much stems from who makes our gin. Leslie is an unusual, peculiar lady who is wonderful and has a wonderful sense of humor, but also is very serious about what she does. And I think that very much speaks to our brand ambassador team and how we represent. We like to call ourselves the Leslie Gracie fan club.
Perfect.
But it's like, we really feel like what we do is honoring what she does. And that's what is very important about our work, is that master distiller role. There's very few females, very few women,
right,
in that master distiller role. And Leslie has been, I think, a lighthouse for that, and showing people that she can do it her way. And
right,
she's hyper unusual and so funny and quirky. But when it comes down to making gin, no one could be more serious about it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to meet her.
Yes.
We'll talk about that.
That'd be really cool.
I got about 20 seconds left.
Okay.
Fred, tell people where we can find Hendrix online.
Online?
Yeah, website and all that. So
website, it's hendrixgin.com. You got to be 21 or older to enter. Also, you can follow us at hendrixgin on Twitter, Instagram, hendrixgin on Facebook. And if you're looking for me, it's at Freddie, F-R-E-D-D-I-E, Hendrix like the gin, on Instagram.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Fred, thanks for taking some time out today.
Absolutely,
man.
My pleasure.
We're going to go see a buddy of ours and go have a drink that I got to introduce you to. Paul Gustings over there. Friends, we're going
to
take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to be back with more. Come on back.
Awesome.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yep. Thanks for tuning into the show. As you know, if you're listening at the top of the show, we are here at the famed French Quarter restaurant right here on Royal Street in Brennan's, and we're sitting in their wonderful wine room, which is fantastic, and I'm pleased to be joined by Braith Tidwell, who is the beverage director here. Braith, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. We're really excited to be here.
Absolutely. We had a couple near misses. We were trying to get you on during South Africa Wine Week. And
I missed
busy.
It. Yes.
It was busy.
Very busy.
Busy time. Yeah. Busy time. And also Patrick Brennan, who is, as the name you may guess, is a member of the family. And Patrick is recently just finished up, as he was telling me, working as a sous chef in the kitchen, and now you're working front house management stuff.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely, man. So you're learning the ropes from soup to nuts, huh?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yep. And great. Fantastic. Well, thanks y'all for hosting. We're sitting here in this really great wine room. And so in the past, about 2 years since you've redone the place, where are we at?
Almost three.
Is it almost three?
It'll be three the 23rd of November. Yeah, okay. So we're actually, our birthday is on Thanksgiving this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Are you guys
going to
do some sort of commemorative kind of thing? Or is that, three is not the big one,
we're
right?
We're going to invite, I think right now we're sitting at 900 people in that day for...
Just regular Thanksgiving. That's a celebration.
So it's going to be a celebration within itself. Yeah, it's going to be a big day.
That works great.
Yeah.
So you guys had a lot of work to do. Patrick, you and I were talking about this right before we went on the air here to renovate the building. And you said basically you took it down to dirt on the floor.
Yeah.
And lots of work.
Spent about 14 months renovating as we opened every wall. I mean, the building's from 1795. We just found more and more things that needed to get fixed. And we want to bring this building back to the beauty it had. It struggled after Katrina, and there's a fresh coat of paint on everything.
Right.
Yeah, we new carpets, new tables, new chairs. I mean, we had to go everything down from the dirt all the way up to the ceilings.
Wow. Did you guys find anything good in the walls? Was there anything in anything? You know,
nothing
like an old bottle of wine or something like
we
that.
We searched for, there were rumors of a Jean Lafitte pirate tunnel,
heard of that.
Which I'm pretty sure every building in the French Quarter has a Jean Lafitte pirate tunnel.
Right.
And we did look to go, apparently, because the building used to be a bank, they thought there was a tunnel over to Bourbon Street. Couldn't find it.
Got it. Okay. Got it. There's probably still some hidden treasure down there somewhere.
Sure, we're hoping.
Right. We're hoping. So, Patrick, do me a favor. Tell us a little bit about, let's talk about the history of the restaurant in general. You mentioned that it was a bank before. Let's kind of take it back for folks that, especially from out of town, that aren't familiar. Maybe know the name Brennan's, but tell us a little bit about the restaurant.
Sure. In the early 1940s, my grandfather's oldest brother, Owen, bought the old Absinthe House, famous bar still on Bourbon Street.
Yep.
Ran it for a couple of years and then ended up, they got a good, they knew the landlord of the building across the street, got a good lease for the restaurant that was there. At the time, it was called the Vieux Carré Restaurant. And they took over the lease, they renamed it the Brennan's Vieux Carré Restaurant, and started running it. That was 1946. 10 years later, they moved locations to the building we're currently in now. At that point, Owen passed away about 6 months before the restaurant opened.
Oh, okay.
And it was left to my Aunt Ella, who now runs Commanders, to take over. So,
how old was your aunt at that time? Pretty young then, right?
She started in 1946 at 18, so she was 28, 30, somewhere in there.
Okay, right.
Yeah. And yeah, so she took over, and she'll tell you to these days, she had no idea what she was doing, but every day she wanted to try to make the place a little bit better. And she worked here until the family split up in 73. And the building was built in 1795, started off as a house, and ended up in 1815 being the first Bank of Louisiana, which it was for, it was 3 or 4 years, and then went back to being a private residence. They had the first American chess master, Paul Morphy, lived here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay. That was in the 1860s or so, 50s and 60s. Apparently, the room that is now the Morphy Room apparently had a chessboard floor where he had large chess pieces he could play, you know.
Yeah.
And then after that, it became a restaurant in the 1920s, and then it became Patio Royale, which was big. They used the courtyard for a lot of debutante receptions and that sort of thing. Okay. And it was more of an event space than a restaurant then. And then, yeah, 1956, Brennan's moved over here. And it's been Brennan's ever since.
Right. Great. And so when you guys, so it was kind of a little bit of a management change though, 3 years ago, right? When you when you took over, so a different part of the family kind of moved in, right?
Yes. My uncle say had some financial trouble, and we ended up being able to take over the building, luckily, and keeping it Brennan's.
Right, which was really important, I think.
It was for us, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you guys put in all this work. How long did it take you to do the renovation, y'all, here?
14 months.
14
months. We closed. We thought it was going to be a few months, and we found out that, you know, building needed a lot more work than we realized.
Nothing ever works out that way, right?
Like that, yeah. So
multiply times three.
Exactly.
And that's, that's how long this is going to take. Well, and as far as then from the perspective of, obviously, it's a famous restaurant here, a Grand Dame, as we say here in New Orleans. Hospitality's, I know, always been important. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But from the perspective of the kitchen and the culinary, when you all came in and took it over a few years ago and redid it, how much stayed the same, and how much did you guys reevaluate what it is that you were doing before and move it in a certain direction?
We were it was actually a lot of fun. I got to work with Slade on reimagining a lot of the old recipes because we had no
Slade
idea what
is your executive chef.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
We didn't have a lot of the old recipes. A lot of it was taken out of the building, right? You know, as we were taking over.
Yeah.
So we got to go through old cookbooks. Amazingly, people show up with menus from all throughout the history of the restaurant. People would just show up and go, my grandmother had dinner there in 1962 and she still has the menu, and it's signed by, you know, Owen or Ella or somebody, and they'll just hand it to you. And so we got to look through these old menus and be like, what in the world
That's
is
great.
This? And then, so all we have is a menu description to go off of, really. We did what research we could, but a lot of times just a menu description. So we're like, okay, how do we do this now? That's where like the Poisson Blanger came from, which has gone off the menu since, but it was the original chef's fish dish.
Yeah.
He did it with trout.
Signature dish.
We had the menu description. And so we just kind of did a modern take on it. And it was our top seller until we took it off to put our new black and red fish on the menu.
Right.
Menu, sorry.
Right. Yeah, I think that the menu really follows classic traditional flavors and dishes that came from Brennan's in New Orleans with a modern take. That's really what you see on the menu here, which is really, really fantastic.
And that's great. It's honoring the tradition. But
exactly.
Then, you know, it's okay to contemporize when something new comes along that works good.
Exactly.
Right? You don't need to keep banging your head against the wall for no reason on certain things. Well, was there a certain amount of oral history that you could get out of people maybe that used to work in the kitchen and things like that, that way you could track some folks down and said, oh yeah, I remember that 15 years ago we used to do this?
I did take one of these old menus to Ella and ask her what the heck some of the stuff was.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of it, you know, there was like aspic and sour cream, which we did not replicate.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, there was also a chicken Hemingway, which was a local advertising guy who came down and had lunch every Friday. And he ended up asking this, it was a caper butter, lemon butter sauce. And he just asked for that every time. So they just ended up naming the dish after him. And we ran that for a little bit. So, you know, I've tried to ask people who were here back then, but not so much of some of the more recent employees, just haven't been able to find everybody.
Yeah, but folks, that's great, because those folks are older customers and these things, looking at the menus like you're talking about. Because a lot of this stuff, I mean, I think people might think stuff's not documented per se, right? I mean, it's not that these things are in the Library of Congress, so you're dependent on old menus. Obviously, the Historic New Orleans Collection does a good job gathering some of this stuff up, but that's really interesting, because you're drawing on this tradition and trying to find root out some of these stories and these things.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, right?
I mean, a lot of investigation. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get to play restaurant sleuth, and that's a very cool thing. And what we're going to do, you guys, we're going to take a break here in just a few seconds because this is a nice little pause, and then we're going to come back. And we're going to talk a little bit more. Let's talk about the food and beverage program as it exists today.
Great.
And we'll talk a little bit about some of the seasonal stuff now that we are actually truly here in fall, not just by date, but by weather.
Yeah.
There's always that thing where it happens on the calendar before it actually happens climatologically. But we're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit more and taste some drinks and some other good stuff. So friends, hey, we're sitting here with Patrick Brennan and Bray Tidwell of Brennan's here on Royal Street, the famous restaurant in the French Quarter. And we're sitting in their lovely wine room, which we will also talk about in just a second as well. Take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show, friends. Come on back.
I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm going back home to stay. Yes, I'm walking to New Orleans.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in today, as always. And as you know, we're sitting here in the lovely wine room, which I have just observed quite astutely is a private dining room, which we'll get to in just a second. I'm really quick on the uptake here, and it's a great room. We're chatting with Patrick Brennan of the Brennan family and Bray Tidwell, who is the beverage director. Mm-hmm. And let me kick this to you, Bray. So,
sure.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you find yourself here at Brennan's? Why are we sitting here in the wine room?
I know.
Right?
Why are we in the wine room together? So my career started in New York. I worked for a few different restaurants until I wound up getting a job. Randomly at first at Union Square Cafe working for Danny Meyer.
Okay.
When I walked into Union Square Cafe, I didn't know who Danny Meyer was or that he had a book coming out or anything like that. It was 2005 and I was coming in on the 20th anniversary of the restaurant being open. And so I kind of had my whole upbringing there in terms of being in the front of house and learning. So I started out as a back waiter, and within 5 years, I worked my way up to wine director. And
where are you from, Braith, originally? Are you from New York?
No, I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. And then I wound up at NYU as an acting major. Many actors in New York, I wound up waiting tables. So,
right,
yeah.
Right. Fair enough,
that's
how to make a living.
Exactly.
That's how you make a living as an actor in New York.
Yeah. So I learned about wine at Union Square Cafe. At the time, they didn't have any sommeliers. As a server, you were taught to and encouraged to learn wine. And so luckily they had classes through the company. So I was able to learn, you know, from actually some people now who are MSs, which was great because at the time they were still, you know, advanced somms and hadn't gotten there yet and were willing to teach people who, you know, were new to wine. I got to learn through some great people in the company. And then, took off with that and became the wine director there in 2011.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I did that for about a year and a half. And then my husband and I decided to move to New Orleans, actually, in 2012. We really loved it here.
Was any particular, was just we, because you liked it here?
And so, we fell in love with New Orleans on our honeymoon in 2007, and we came down every year for vacation, just to eat and drink.
Okay.
So that's, we loved eating and drinking here. So we decided to move down, and because we were in love with it. And so we got here 5 years ago, actually this month. So,
great. And then and then did you connect with these guys after you got here?
So I
did it.
You know, I followed the process of the restaurant closing down and then reopening with Ralph as the owner. And I was kind of watching it all in the papers, and I saw the building being built. And I was really intrigued by it. And I actually knew Slade's wife, Allison, Vines, and I asked her if they ever hired sommeliers, and she kind of hooked me up with an interview, and that's how I got here. Yeah, great. So I started here as a sommelier 2 years ago and got into management.
So not too long after they reopened,
exactly.
And then you started working.
Yeah, it was about a year after they reopened that I came on.
Yeah,
so I
great.
Wasn't part of the first wave. I was part of the second wave. But yeah. So
got
that's
it.
Sort of the background of me getting here.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Well, and Patrick, we were talking a little bit during the break, too. I think we established your family lineage to a degree. But I liked what you were talking about, how you – give us a little bit of your background. Like, I like how you said you started cooking when you were nine over the summers at Redfish Grill.
Yeah,
one
started,
of the other properties.
Started with our pastry chef as a little kid. She had more patience than you could imagine dealing with a nine-year-old in her kitchen, but it was good. I used to come home just covered in chocolate. But then, I moved on to being a prep cook, eventually up to a line cook. I moved over to Ralph's on the Park, worked with Gerard over there. And then we used to work summers with there. Till I got to college, and then I went off to college, came back, went to culinary school in the CIA in Napa. You know, I'm a New Orleans boy, the choice between upstate New York and Napa.
good move.
You made the right choice.
Yeah, wasn't looking forward to winters. So spent 2 years out there, and I was planning to stay and go move to San Francisco and work in some of the kitchens there, but I found out we had taken over Brennan's. So I packed up, I moved back home. Worked for about a year and a half at Ralph's on the Park while we did the renovation, and then moved here as a line cook for the opening team, and worked my way up to sous chef, and did that for about 2.5 years as sous chef, and then now moving to front of house, learning the other side.
Yeah, that's great. And I like, Patrick, what you said about your pops, because you asked me, you know, I don't know if you know my dad, but if you do, you'll know you're not just going to come in with the silver
yep,
ring. You're
right there at the bottom in the trenches with everybody else getting this place open. We opened the week of Thanksgiving, which Braith was lucky enough to miss.
Yeah, don't
ever open a restaurant the week that we opened on Tuesday, and we had to do Thanksgiving lunch Thursday.
Oh, and I'm going to guess because of the name and the situation, you guys, it wasn't
busy.
You were busy.
We held back on the reservation some, but that was a fun day. We're still trying to figure out where to put pots and pans, and we were trying to do Thanksgiving for a couple hundred people.
Wow. Did you guys redo the kitchen and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Did you do the whole nine yards?
Everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. So let's talk a little bit, y'all, about the wine room in which we're sitting, because this is a very special. I was here, as you all know, with you guys at an event for South Africa Wine Week a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
And I did a nice tasting down here. This was actually the first time I had been in here, so this part of the operation, since you all redid it. This is a beautiful space.
Thank you. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. I think people are continually stunned when they walk in this room. The restrooms are kind of not far from this room, so we have a lot of people who kind of pass in this direction, make a left, and then they're just astonished at what they find, because this room is absolutely gorgeous. It used to be the stables, so that's kind of why you have these alcoves here, but we've basically just turned it into a stunning dining room for any party up to 16 people. So,
and it's as close probably as we get to a wine cellar in New Orleans also, because it's brick and it's a little bit lower. Right. And so we, you know, it's people, if you don't realize, if you're listening from outside New Orleans, water table is very high here.
Right.
So things like cellars and basements in the traditional sense in the north and Europe and things like that are not common here.
Right.
So this is a unique space on that level as well.
Very. Yes. And the cellar itself is, you can see through the glass windows, the cellar. So it makes it very exciting to have dinner here. And you kind of, it's a working cellar. So not only are you having dinner here, but you can see the psalms, the managers running through, grabbing bottles, going out. It's, you feel a real part of the wine program when you're in here, which I really love about it.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
In the space here, because we have a large dining room table, so people, special events stuff,
exactly.
Private room stuff, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah, anything. And we've even had, when the room's been empty, two tops come in and have dinner here because they see it and they really want to do it. And mm-hmm. if the room's available, we'll put anyone in that wants to experience.
Okay, I'm making a mental note of that, so I want to call that favor in some time. My lovely wife Sylvia is sitting here and helping.
As long as it's not reserved for a party, we can absolutely do it.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah,
I'm going to remember that one.
Do it.
I was joking too, or making me think. I was laughing as a Christian. You're general manager.
Yes.
When we had come in for the event for the South African Wine Week, we actually came in along the back wall over
right.
this way.
Right.
And he did the cruel trick of actually walking us through the main dining room. So I
yeah.
smelled everything
yeah.
and what everybody was eating, and I think he did that on purpose.
I'm sure. He does that a lot on purpose to tempt you into returning.
Well, so we have a fall menu. We got about a minute and a half left, you guys, before we take a break. We're going to come back to some stuff. But we've moved into fall here in New Orleans, and you all have, keeping with the season, a fall menu coming up. Let's do this, Braith. Let's talk about drinks for about a minute.
Sure.
Before we take a break. And then we'll come right back to this. Let's start there, and we'll get into the food
absolutely.
After the break.
Yeah. So our basically fall cocktails, I'm so lucky to work with Lou Brow, who's our head bartender here. She does a fantastic job putting together these cocktails, and we really wanted to focus on, you know, I think not only the spices and the influences of our cuisine, but also the cuisines of New Orleans. So taking into, you know, Vietnamese culture and all of the different cultures that make up New Orleans. So we've really kind of started to reorganize the cocktails with that in mind. But so we've added some nice drinks, including a banana daiquiri, which has actually been on since summer, which is
okay.
hilarious to me because there's nothing like enjoying a Bananas Foster with a banana daiquiri
that
if you
works.
Really want
right.
to like go right. full speed into banana. But that's still on the list, which is fantastic. We've added the drink that you're enjoying, which is the Ottoman Paris Combier Crème de Pêche liqueur, sparkling wine, brandy, and some pimento bitters. I think that's a great fall cocktail because you get some of the peach, but it's almost like a little bit of a faded peach. You're kind of going into the more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's mild. Sweeter. It reminds me of a Bellini
yeah.
to a degree, but and you have the
but
nice bitter note and the sparkling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So it's very reminiscent of fall. We also have the Romero, which is an excellent tequila drink with spiced pear brandy, orange, agave, and rosemary. So again, bringing in maybe those Thanksgiving herbs that you would
sure,
have with your turkey.
Stuff,
exactly.
Yeah,
so
right.
we're kind of recalling the flavors of fall right now with the cocktail
this
menu.
This all sounds good. We're going to come back to that. We're going to come back to the drinks and stuff, and we're going to come back to talk a little bit about food. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're here at Brennan's. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffuletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmers market. Check out our pop-up farmers markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. It's 716 Iberville.
Go down by the cow with it. Give it to him. Holly golly. Jump. Give it to him. Give it to him.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Noel Drinks Show, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. As you know, we are sitting here in the lovely wine room here at Brennan's Restaurant on Royal Street. And we've had some lovely bites just put in front of us. And Patrick, tell us a story, because I like your connection to this with the dim sum in San Francisco, and then the spin on the Beurre Blanc sauce.
Yeah, so it's barbecue shrimp dumplings. It's something I kind of started doing when I lived in San Francisco, because I fell in love with dim sum out there. So it's chopped shrimp with rosemary and lemon zest, wrapped in a dumpling wrapper, pan fried, and goes with classic New Orleans barbecue sauce. And I mean, this, and the sauce is a recipe I've known as long as I can remember. I learned it from Gerard Maris back at Ralph's in the Park. He reinvented the dish in mid '80s at Mr. B's, and so he used to run that at Ralph's in the Park, and I learned that recipe from him, and just kind of adapted it to something new.
That's pretty cool, and we don't have to give everything away, but. Keeping it local. I did not realize that there was a Beta beer in there.
Yeah. So back in the 80s, apparently when they first opened a Beta, what was that, 83 or 84? They apparently used to come around to the back doors of restaurants with milk jugs full of Beta beer saying, "Hey guys, try this. Please put it on your menu. Please use it in your cooking."
So
you know,
cool.
They were trying to
somehow take it from us and do something with it.
Yeah. So Gerard was, the classic Beurre Blanc is white wine reduced down with, and you mount it in butter, and he did it with the Worcestershire, which was kind of the classic barbecue shrimp, and then he used a Beta beer instead of the white wine.
So cool.
Yeah,
that's great. What a great idea, and then bringing in your influence from California, and I'm a big fan of dim sum as well. Growing up in that part of the world, I did not know you were doing that here. So tell us a little bit about the tuna tartare that we also have, which looks great.
It's a classic tuna tartare with just a potato gaufret on top, a little ponzu dressing. It's great. We have the champagne happy hour every day.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I wanted to plug that since
please.
We have
that.
These dishes are available during our champagne happy hour, which is every day during the week, Monday through Friday. It's 2 p.m. to 7 p.m., and we have very deeply discounted prices on a lot of excellent champagne. So it's highly recommended to come to the gorgeous courtyard, enjoy a bottle of champagne.
Because the weather is just right,
food.
Right? For
the
that right
is
now?
Perfect
is the time
right
for
now.
It?
We do sabering as well on Friday. Days at 5 o'clock, so it's a really fun time to come in.
Do you handle the blade, Braith?
I do.
Nice.
Sometimes poorly, sometimes really well.
Right on.
It depends on the day and the bottle.
Right, that's great. So it's specials on champagne, and is this by the glass and by the bottle?
By the glass, by the bottle, and champagne cocktail. So it's a very versatile, fun menu.
Okay, a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And speaking of menu then, so we got a memo from the kitchen, from executive chef Slade Rushing, and Slade's, Patrick, maybe jump in on this real quick while we're shuffling through a couple things here. Slade's done really well for himself lately, as far as getting some great notoriety and doing a great job.
He's been nominated for the James Beard Best Chef of the South since we opened every year.
Yeah,
I believe he and Allison were nominated once at Mila as well.
Mm-hmm.
What we were best restaurant in the city from, was that New Orleans Magazine?
That was New Orleans Magazine.
We were on the Condé Nast 200 best restaurants in the world. And I mean, a lot of that is Slade's food driving it. I mean, he's very talented. doing this classic food, because he worked with a lot of classical French chefs both in New York and San Francisco, and just taking the New Orleans spin on it. And it's come out very nicely.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice fit, yeah, right, for what y'all are
absolutely
doing here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really at breakfast, we've got the eggs a la Turk, mm-hmm, which is an old... it was a dish we found on a menu from the 1950s. It used to be fried chicken livers, poached eggs, and a Holland rusk. We have updated it. Soft scrambled eggs done tableside. Smoked hen of the wood mushrooms on brioche. And then we put a piece of roasted foie gras to replace the fried chicken livers.
It's amazing.
Right on top. So
that's
we kind
nice
of updated
duck eggs,
the
right? Yeah,
it's,
you said
it's
these
duck
are
eggs. Yes.
Yeah.
And so it is a decadent way to start your day.
That'll go great with champagne.
Yeah, it sure does. Yes.
Just kick the decadence notch up a level there.
Right. Yes. Absolutely.
And so a couple others that Slade wanted us to know.
Absolutely.
Which,
so we've
fantastic.
Got another kind of modern take on an old classic, the biscuits and gravy, which is on the breakfast/lunch menu as well, which is plantain quail crepinette with celery root gravy and a sunny side up quail egg. This dish, obviously with the quail, it kind of plays off of, you know, the old chicken and biscuits, just with a much more elegant and
nicer bird.
Take.
We're going,
exactly,
we're,
just
like
slightly
the duck
nicer
eggs. We're just going to a nicer bird.
Yeah, yeah, yep. It's fancy. So he's doing that on breakfast, and then at dinner. I know Patrick earlier talked about the poisson blanche, which is just a really beautifully poached fish. And we have in its place right now the black and red fish.
Okay. Sure.
So we're actually doing a really nice char of that with Creole seasoning. And it's, we do it actually with the blowtorch. So
yes.
So
instead of using the classic blackening seasoning, we mix our Creole seasoning with some leek ash.
Uh-huh.
So instead of actually searing it cast iron, we're cooking it. We have this oven called the CVAP. And so we cook it at about 140 degrees, coated in butter, so that it's almost poached. And then finish it, flash it in the oven real quick, pull it out, dust it with the leek ash, and then blowtorch it.
Wow.
So you get that blackened flavor without... any risk of the fish getting overcooked.
Yeah, interesting. It's just sealing it in very quickly.
Exactly.
So it's super moist, super tender, and then you blast it one last second with the blackening season, so you get that flavor, and then the leek ash, it actually comes out looking almost perfectly black.
It does. It's really neat.
Yes, it's a little different. Some purists will probably not love it, but it's really good.
That's one of those fantastic.
The first time I had it, I was like, "Y'all sure you want to put this on the menu? Like, this might be too good. Like, we're gonna get stuck with this forever."
No.
I mean,
very flavorful.
And are you guys kind of pulling in like the catch of the day to whatever the fish is?
Everything is very fresh, so it changes every day. But everything is local. I mean, we really try to focus on you know, homegrown, local, and seasonal cuisine.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. Which you guys do really well.
Yeah. And from the Gulf.
Obviously from the Gulf. And that's great. Let's talk a little bit too. Let's talk about the wine program in this room, because we were talking before we went on the air and Braith about, you know, obviously like a lot of places, y'all lost a lot of bottles in Katrina,
right?
And then going through, and then when y'all took over, going through playing with the bottles and the inventory, which was a big job. You said 9,000 bottles was
about
that, right?
At that point. Yeah, it's over 10 now. But
okay, but. Sorting out what you had and what was there, and then going through and then doing what you're doing. And I know that, and you both, either of you can speak to this, I'm sure, you know, there's a serious wine program that goes on here. We don't want to forget that part.
Yeah, it's very serious. I mean, I think Patrick would kind of back me up that there's a heavily focused Burgundy list here, reds and whites. It really abounds in our list. And I think what's incredible is you can find some awesome values. You can find some 06 Chateau for $90 and be able to taste things that you wouldn't be able to anywhere else because of the depth of the cellar here that they uncovered when they got here.
Right.
So it's really special. There are some awesome jewels and finds within the list. And then, of course, we are in the French Quarter, so you have to be competitive in terms of your other wines. Obviously, in the Quarter, you can basically turn every corner and walk into a bar and get a glass of cab. So how are you going to compete with that here at Brennan's? And I think we try to put some awesome wines on the list for really nice, valuable prices.
Smart selections, and going that way,
exactly.
too. Exactly. As you said, Braith, is an important thing to do
these days. I think we want you to discover something when you're here and have fun with the wine. We don't take ourselves too seriously. I think with the food, we want to give you an experience, and we want you to taste New Orleans, and we want the wine to pair with the food, and we don't want it to be about, you know, a pretentious wine program. We want it to just flow with your experience.
That's never what this city's about, right?
No.
It's about breaking bread and sharing food and sharing drink, and if you...
Exactly.
We can leave pretentiousness to other cities.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you guys, we got about 45 seconds left. Patrick, tell us where people can find the restaurant, both on the street as well as online.
Address is 417 Royal Street, so 400 block of Royal, across the street from the courthouse. And then the website is brennansneworleans.com.
Yeah. Nice and easy. And you guys, and breakfast, lunch, dinner, yes?
So yeah, we have one menu for breakfast and lunch. Mm-hmm. We open during the week at 9 a.m. on the weekends at 8. And we serve until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we open for dinner at 6. We serve until 10 o'clock at night. So yeah, and the happy hour throughout with the bar food, which is amazing. Yeah,
absolutely. So and then ask about the wine room. Just ask about the wine room when you come in.
I'm not making any promises.
No promises. Right? No problem. Don't drop my name. They'll make you sit on the curb outside on Royal Street. But thanks, Braith. And Patrick,
absolutely.
I really appreciate you guys being here. Thanks for the hospitality.
Our
pleasure. Really lovely.
Thank you.
Friends had a great time here at Brennan's. Come check them out, 400 block of Royal Street. And hey, we're going to get into some tuna tartare and Patrick's special dim sum shrimp barbecue dumplings.
Mm.
Friends, we'll be back with we're going to close out the show here on the NOLA Drink Show. So come on back.
You knew that I love you. Oh, how I love you.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Mighty cool to find you on a mighty broad day.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed the interviews. Had a great time chatting with Fred Perrant there at the beginning of the show from Hendrick's Gin. And once again, want to give a special thanks to the Bourbon O Bar at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel. Go check them out, friends. Thanks to them for hosting us. That was a lot of fun. And cool program. Great Ramos Gin Fizz, as you probably gathered. And then also thanks to Patrick Brennan, Braith Tidwell, and the rest of the gang there at Brennan's for hosting us. Really interesting interview. Really cool to sit there in their wine room and chat with those guys and do what we do. And you know, one of the things I wanted to mention, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, is we talk about the restaurant industry from different angles, restaurant, bar industry, these things. And one of the topics that we always seem to hit on, or almost always seem to hit on here in New Orleans, is the places that are good, the places that are successful, the places that know what they're doing, understand hospitality. And I don't want to, we can talk about hours about this. It is an integral part of the New Orleans dining and drinking experience is hospitality. And I think that in a lot of other places, maybe you kind of think you do it well, and in a lot of places they do it well. But here it's integral. I think in some places it's secondary or it's sort of seen as optional. You have these places that, you know, I'm too cool for school, so I don't have to do these sorts of things to put on, you know, a show. The show last week, if you didn't catch it, check it out on the podcast with Chris Hanna and Paul Gustings, two of the most noted bartenders in New Orleans. And so much of what we talked about them was putting on, creating an environment, running a room, how what that really means. That's more important than the drinks or the person behind the bar. And if you're going to do something well here in New Orleans, you have to understand that. I think I was just talking to a friend of mine a couple days ago who was talking to a friend from Chicago that, oh, hey, we're going to come down. I guess their place in Chicago didn't make it or something. And we're just going to come down to New Orleans because it's magical there and everybody loves everything that's going on and we do a great job. So people are going to love it. If you don't understand the hospitality component that you need to provide here in New Orleans, I'm not saying these folks don't. I'm just saying a lot of people come to town. I see more and more of it where people don't take it as seriously as they should. And it's really, really important. The younger generation of restaurateurs here in town, the good ones, understand and pay homage, if you will, to the older generation of restaurateurs in town who understand hospitality. And when we were at Brennan's, and this is where, or even at the Bourbon O Bar, they were just so welcoming. Yeah, sure, tape the show here. It's great. And the bartender was wonderful working with us to get us the Ramos Gin Fizzes when we needed them during the break and so on and so forth. It was fantastic. And then we go to Brennan's and, you know, very welcoming, very warm, hosting us there in their wine room. And I didn't ask for this. Of course, we taste on the show different drinks and sometimes food. But, you know, unless there's something specific going on, like the show is about tasting, if I go pay a visit somewhere, I don't ask for this stuff. And, you know, Braith and Patrick had Slade in the kitchen, their executive chef, sent out a couple plates for us and made us a couple cocktails while we were there. And that to me, friends, is hospitality. Then Patrick takes us and shows us around the restaurant. And one of the things that I want to say is very recently, about 3 weeks ago, my lovely wife and I, I'm going to pause right here and say happy anniversary to my lovely wife. Today is our anniversary. She and I got married 5 years ago today in the French Quarter. We had been together for a ways longer than that, but we tied the knot 5 days ago today. So happy anniversary. Love you there, Sylvia. And there you go. My partner in crime. And Sylvie helps out a lot on the show and stuff, especially when we go tape on location. She's one of the best decorative artists in all of the region, does a lot of historical restoration stuff in town and all that kind of stuff. So just want to give a shout out to her and my partner in life and my best friend, Sylvia. So anyway, but Sylvie and I went to a vacation on the Florida Panhandle to the Seagrove area. And I'm not going to pick on anybody because some of the places we went were great and the hospitality was pretty good. Some of the places we went to, the hospitality was not particularly good. And I was just simply reminded of the fact of how good at the good places anyway in New Orleans we have it. And I just say this because I don't want to take it for granted. And, you know, I sometimes have to leave or we all have to leave to realize how good we actually have it here. So make sure that when you go to a place that you acknowledge and experience the hospitality, tip appropriately. Just remember that really when you go a lot of places around the country, a lot of places around the planet, you are not going to experience the level of hospitality that we do here in New Orleans. And when I go to a place like Brennan's or just tape like at Bourbon O Bar, like I said, I am reminded of that. And I just wanted to point that out because it's a really important thing here. And really to thank the folks that run these establishments and operate and work at, also the wonderful staff people that work at all these places that provide this experience. It's part of the environment. It's part of why our guests, our visitors, our tourists come here, and it's part of why we enjoy going out here is the hospitality that New Orleans provides. Never forget it and patronize the places that provide it. There you go. There's my take-home message there. Friends, of course, if you're here in the United States listening on the radio or listening to the podcast, thanks as always. We have Thanksgiving coming up a week from today. I get asked this a lot. Hey, what to serve Thanksgiving wine-wise? It's an interesting one. Really, there's a huge number of choices, I think, that you can serve pretty comfortably. I think one good rule of thumb is have a red and have a white at the very least. You have some people, I only drink red or I only drink white. So you can actually kind of satisfy people on both sides of the aisle. Now, I think the things to stay away from typically, and I'll get to a couple of points here in a second, but stay away from the really heavy stuff on either side. And so these are, you know, if you like, drink what you like, okay? If you like stuff, get what you like. So I'm just talking about some general rules of thumb that are kind of accepted and things are some of my preferences and sort of there's some reasoning behind this. Won't go into too much detail, but you know, the big buttery oaky Chardonnays tend not to play nice with certain things, especially on the Thanksgiving table. And similarly, some really big, heavy reds, if we're talking about turkey, especially if we're talking about, say, a Cajun style turkey, like a fried Cajun, deep fried Cajun turkey that has some spice to it. The heavier the tannins, the higher the level of alcohol, the more you're going to get that burn from the spice. If you're doing gumbo like we do down here and your gumbo's got a little zip to it, you know, you want to stay away from the heavier reds of these things. So I think, you know, some things you might want to consider choosing. Gamay, the Beaujolais region of France, Gamay Noir, or a New World Gamay. Really, really good choice. A little bit lighter in body. Nice fruit notes, sometimes sort of strawberry notes. Will kind of work with the savoriness of a gumbo pretty well. Works with turkey pretty well. On the white side, you can certainly go with a Sauvignon Blanc. I would stay away from the really racy stuff because I think you can overpower some of the milder dishes if that's the way you're going for Thanksgiving. A nice South African Chenin Blanc. Yes, we just came off South Africa Wine Week. That's a really, really good choice. Can kind of make your Chardonnay drinkers happy, can make your Sauvignon Blanc drinkers happy. Nice acidity that's going to work there. Will stand up to a little bit of spice, but will play nice with a lot of your veggie dishes and these things. Really good choice there. Bubbles, friends. Bubbles are always a really good choice for Thanksgiving. You know, and also, especially again, if you're doing the deep fried turkey thing, bubbles is a great way to go. Champagne, any sort of sparkling is going to work there pretty well. One of the classic red choices, Pinot Noir. Sort of the same reasons why I just gave with Gamay is Pinot can always be a nice choice. Goes pretty well with turkey. That's a pretty good one. Rosés are always a good go-to, really, I think, around the year, just about anywhere, but in particular here in New Orleans. Rosés will also play nice with a lot of the dishes, can kind of satisfy stuff in the middle. I would tend to go again with sort of the drier stuff. We're not talking about, you know, white Zinfandel. We're talking about true rosés. Of course, those are some pretty good choices. I think you can go with some off dries. Again, if you're serving stuff that has a little bit of giddy up to it, a little zip, a little spice to it, an off-dry Riesling or Gewürztraminer can be a really, really nice choice that way. These things can be pretty versatile to a degree. Again, rosés, I want to come back to that. Those can also be very, very versatile. So again, I would go with a red and a white, and then a bubbles, I think, is always a good choice to give people some options. You know, if you're going to hold a gun to my head, right, this particular year, I'm going to go with a Gamay on my red side. I'm going to go with a South African Chenin on the white side, and then I'm going to go with some pretty straightforward bubbles in the middle, and then maybe throw a rosé in for good laughs. I think that all can work pretty well. But again, I think the most important thing is do what you like, drink what you like. If you want a big heavy, a big bad cab, then go that way. If you want a buttery oaky, so-called California style Chardonnay, then go that way. Okay, you know, do what you like. I'm just throwing out some things that are kind of based typically on what we find on the table and what might work. We're dealing with vegetables, we're dealing with poultry. We are dealing, because we're here in New Orleans, if we're talking about what's on our table with gumbo, maybe to a degree, depending on how you do your gumbo, of course, or if we're talking about a Cajun deep fried turkey with a little bit of spice to it. The one thing I like about Gamay, just bringing that one back real quick with gumbo, is there's a sort of plays really nice with the savory character of the roux there and how the gumbo kind of works, especially if you're doing, say, like chicken and andouille or something like that, and it's not too heavy in alcohol, so that little bit of spice from andouille goes well. But an off dry is going to work there, rosé is going to work there, anything with a good bit of acid like that Chenin's going to work there too. So there's just a few tips for you. Get out there, buy some bottles from a local bottle shop for Thanksgiving. Again, if you're listening in the United States, I hope everyone has a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. Break bread with your family, break bread with your friends, spread the love, share the love, be kind to one another, use your turn signal. We'll be back with a new show in a couple weeks. And friends, until then, cheers, y'all.